Go live. All right, great. Nice little red icon to tell us that we are live. That's helpful. Thanks for jumping on, Morley. I really look forward to the conversation today and have enjoyed getting to know you so far.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, I know the headline of Director of Engineer at Vibrant is just a snippet of what you do. I'd love to learn more about your background and how you got to be running this company, but more specifically around you and what your past experience was that you found interesting and how led it to what you're doing today.
Yeah, totally. I actually went to school for marketing, funnily enough. But I remember my first marketing job was at a really small ad agency. And I was not a very good marketer, but they basically couldn't fire me because I was the only one who could set up email. And eventually at that job, we would do a lot of HTML emails and a lot of Facebook applications, and I would end up editing the code a little bit. And the reason I would do that is because my parents enrolled me in this computer camp when I was in high school. And we just learned how to write C++ at that computer camp. So I kind of knew how to put stuff together. And I just really liked working on web projects and building things. After that agency, I randomly applied to a job at OkCupid. This was, I think, when I interviewed there was 15 people in New York. I assumed it was 100 people in San Francisco or something, but it was only 15 people in New York.
What time period was this? Was this?
This was 10, about 11 years ago now. This is in 2010.
So this is kind of pre Tinder's explosion.
This is very much pre Tinder. Yeah. I had been told about OkCupid before. Someone, actually an ex-girlfriend of mine, recommended that I join OkCupid. And I always thought there was a couple of dating sites that had Cupid in the name. So I always thought I had joined it, but it was a much worse dating site that I think was attached to The Onion or something. They had like a white label dating site for some reason. But OkCupid, I had joined, I think, a year before I applied to this job, and it clearly looked the best. It was the most user-friendly. And just out of nowhere, I think it was probably 1 a.m. in the morning when I applied. I had eaten too much chocolate cake for dinner, so I couldn't fall asleep. And I was like, why not apply for jobs? Again, they hired, I wasn't a trained computer scientist. They hired me to do front end stuff. And I was really awful at that job too. And they couldn't fire me because there was two people on the front end team. And slowly I just kind of, the thing is, I love that job because I love working on products and building things for real people to use. So that was just like a great environment for me. I slowly, you know, made a lot of mistakes there, but ended up going the management track there. Around 3 years ago, I left to join the sort of Stellar ecosystem because actually one of the OkCupid co-founders, Christian Rutter, he grew up with Jed McCaleb, who started Stellar. And oh, so cool. They've been childhood friends, and Jed kind of pulled them in to build, I guess you can call them consumer products, basically more usable products than what you see in the blockchain space. And I decided to join with them. I thought it was a really interesting product. I didn't know anything about cryptocurrency. And it's just been really cool. I joined Stellar. We started at this kind of offshoot of Stellar that was meant to build products for the Stellar ecosystem. And a year after that, we decided that it was better just to do it inside the Stellar Development Foundation. So I've been here ever since, working at Vibrant.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Good timing. I feel like it feels like you got a solid foundation at OkCupid. My remembrance of OkCupid, what I recall from it is like, it had a lot of details, and then you upload all these details, and then Tinder comes around. And it's like, what's your age and where are you? And a picture. How did OkCupid, I mean, what were the like product lessons you feel like you kind of came out of that learning? I'm curious to hear, because it's a big consumer app. I mean, it really pioneered, like, it was kind of the next wave after eHarmony for dating, which turned out to be a huge space.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember, I think it was in 2012, maybe. I went to an Aziz Ansari show, and he did a joke where he was like, eHarmony is for people who want to get married, and Match.com is people who want to get laid right now, and OkCupid is for people who are cheap and want to get laid right now. And I was like, wow, they actually, a comedian said the name of the company I work for on stage. It was the product lessons. I remember, I worked with so many talented people there who really taught me a lot, because I knew almost nothing there except, you know, how to get lucky and not get fired because the company's too small. One thing I remember, especially from the very first head of product there, Daniel Andres, he's a great designer, and he really I was not very detail oriented when I started there. I would have just like the wrong margins and the wrong spacing and everything. And he really taught me to be very detail oriented with both like developing things and also just like naming things. Like he was really big on not calling the people who used OkCupid users, but as you know, they're people. And I remember just things like, you know, making sure that UIs are polished and that buttons have like hover and active states so that they react to how you touch them. So I feel like OkCupid was very, the UI was very deep and very well thought out. And I don't think I would think in that way if I hadn't worked on it and had to implement it and then, you know,
hand how about it over. In the code, did you also keep it as like people, or did you use user? I mean, that's pretty committed if you keep it. It can't be, right? You have to use user.
Yeah, I think there was code before me. There was also backend code that you have to choose between calling people the right thing and, you know, keeping the names consistent. And I think we chose consistency.
Yeah, but definitely, no, that makes sense. Know,
yeah, yeah, totally.
One of the things I interviewed Danielle, the CEO of Stellar, and one of the things I was impressed by is just the scope of the vision. I mean, in crypto, there's so many things going on that it's difficult to even keep track of a section of crypto like DeFi or underlying infrastructure, trading platforms. But Stellar just has it seems like an awesome combination of great design, great team, and they were relatively early too with a great leadership team. What kind of interaction does your team at Vibrant have with the bigger Stellar organization? Is there a feeling that you're part of the Stellar ecosystem, or how does it sort of feel from the inside in terms of how things work?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree that Stellar is not like any blockchain company I've come across. The design work is great. Like you said, the leadership is great. I think something that has a common theme among all blockchain companies is that it's a great piece of technology, and it's difficult to bridge the gap between the technology and, you know, real people getting a benefit out of it, like people other than just random speculators. So the reason SDF decided to start this project is they wanted to build up a bunch of different use cases. They do that through their ecosystem just by developing projects outside, but they also wanted to develop one internally. So we started just trying to build this thing. You know, we knew that in Argentina there's an insane hyperinflation problem, and people, you know, their go-to is to try to get US dollars the however they can and stuff them in their mattress. And the government kind of tries as much as they can to prevent people from doing that, but there's still a need for people to you know, not lose their money just because they have it in their home currency. So yeah, the way I approach it, I mean, you know, the team that works in Vibrant, who are all really talented, they approach it the same way. They're very user centric. We talk to a lot of users and figure out what they need. And on the engineering side, we try to marry those requirements. We try to make exactly what users want. We try to compromise as little as possible, but we also try to build it on the Stellar ecosystem and use the Stellar tools. So it's a mix of, you know, we're trying to prove out, we're trying to build something real, something real world on the Stellar ecosystem. We're constantly giving feedback to the Stellar team about things like APIs, and we've added standards we've influenced adding standards to the Stellar ecosystem to kind of solve the real world problems that they haven't, you know, been able to write code to solve yet. So it's kind of a mix. Yeah, totally.
And what I know we kind of started on OKCupid, but what's the, give me the like one sentence about Vibrant.
It's only a mobile app, and the idea is that if you're in Argentina, you can try to buy USD from the black market or something and just hold it in your mattress, or you can use this app and you can deposit your ARC from your local bank into the app. And you can use that AST to buy USDC, which is a stable coin pegged to the US dollar. So that way it's not under your mattress. It can't be stolen or anything. You'll get a really solid rate, a really competitive rate. And, you know, you'll have USDC. You won't be as exposed to hyperinflation or devaluation.
It's awesome. That's a huge problem. We work with a lot of people from Argentina. The graph online, and it's just amazingly consistently down, the Argentinian peso versus US dollar. Not to say, I mean, US just printed a zillion dollars, so I have to imagine our inflation is going to continue to be a problem, but it just, that's a whole nother level. I don't know. It's pretty scary, you know,
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Have, you work super hard, you save some money, and then it's like, it's the most kind of criminal form of currency devaluation, because it's just, it, you know, you can't be competitive in a global market if you're getting paid in a system of currency that's just declining all the time. It's like, I think it's probably the most undervalued. I think our generation just hasn't experienced massive inflation, at least in the United States. This was a problem of my grandparents' generation after World War II, where that was, you know, during the Depression, that was a major problem. But yeah, it is. For people who live it, it's probably just difficult to describe how frustrating it is. So yeah, kudos to you guys. It's an amazing mission. One person mentioned that's tuning in. They ask, as a director of engineering, how do you keep up with the tech, specifically, you know, the on the grounds, you know, code that's being implemented? Do you consciously dive in? Do you book hours for yourself to stay fresh on what's the latest, or do you have an approach to that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I probably don't do that as well as I should. I used to keep up just by sort of being a player coach and writing a lot of code myself, but I've been trying not to do that the past couple of years, because it's just really hard to, it's hard to be available for people when you're trying to concentrate on something and solve some really deep problem. But I do that a little bit nowadays, but I try not to. A lot of it is just, honestly, a lot of it is just hiring the right people and giving them the autonomy and the tools and the decision making power to do what's best, because they'll know the code better than I would, even if I wasn't a manager and I was coding alongside of them. They're still going to understand the code, their own code, better than I will. So for me, I try as much as possible, mostly just to set standards for what I expect and let them figure out how the best way to solve a problem, the best way to structure something. But it's pretty tough. You know, I have to also point out when when things as in general are getting more complicated or getting harder to understand. So I just try to, you know, I rely a lot on my feeling of how people are reacting to certain things. I rely on my gut when I open the code base and try to figure something out. How do I react to that? But it's probably something that I could do a lot better, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a balance, right? It's like, as you get older, as people get older, they tend to take on more managerial positions because they've kind of, what's that? There's an expression for this. It's, oh God, it's where you're promoted just beyond your level of, competence. Peter Principle, I think it's called.
Yeah.
It's,
I think,
like,
so.
You know, and yeah. It's, I think in software development, there's a fine line between you're either, you know, looking at a terminal and a code editor and deploying, or you're not. And I think it's a natural evolution that people have when they kind of graduate. They feel competent enough in every different portion of the stack, or just want to switch it up and have more of a managerial position. How do you, we run into a lot of people who are on that edge. You know, maybe they've been a software developer for 7-10 years. They're thinking about becoming a manager, but it's a distinct difference. And some people, I think they get burned, you know, they go into a managerial position and then it's like, well, you spend a year and a half of your life doing this and realize it's not what you want. And it's oftentimes a pay decrease when you're an independent contributor. How do you think about what advice would you give to yourself or give to someone in that position where they're thinking about potentially making the jump to manager, versus just doubling down on the tech and becoming, you know, samurai of of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, to be honest, I would be very suspicious of a company that gave a pay decrease for individual contributors. It was definitely the case at OkCupid. It's definitely the case at Stellar, where ICs are paid as much as, or in some cases more than managers. I think it's just as valuable to be an individual contributor. It's probably more valuable because, you know, you have to solve a lot harder problems. Managers have to solve very thorny people problems and sequencing problems. So I think if you work at a sane company where it's a case where they're valued equally, I think it's super important to know yourself and understand what it is that you like about working. For me, I always found it really hard to follow other people's rules. I have to be able to, you know, think about things on my own terms. So for me, management was just the way that, you know, I could write the code style document instead of someone else. Although then I started to realize that that's not what you want. You want people to you want it. You want to set the expectations and let people write the code style document. So for me, yeah, I would say, you know, have a good sense of what you want. And I also think, you know, I think trial is a good thing. I know I've known plenty of people, not just people I work with directly, but people who try out one route and decide they want something else, or they try out being an engineer or being a product manager and decide to go another route. I think, you know, it's hard to tell what the day-to-day is from the outside. You really can't, there's no substitution from just trying it or, you know, shadowing a person and seeing what their day-to-day is like and see if you actually like it. I would definitely say don't become a manager just because you think it's a path to prestige, because it's usually not. And there's, I'd much rather have a happy IC than an unhappy manager, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's great advice. What about technology? So there, have you stayed up on, I mean, I'd love to hear what you guys are using as a base, as a tech stack, maybe how you, if you were the one to make that decision or how that decision was made. And if you have any color on just thinking about different emerging technologies. I remember it was not long ago, maybe it just had to be maybe 7 years ago now, where I was listening to a podcast and the creator of Ruby on Rails was talking about Ruby on Rails. And he's like, this is the, you know, at the time Ruby on Rails was the, you know, the tech stack everyone was using. And then new ones come and go, Vue and React Native. And this will continue to happen, I'm sure. I guess just more broadly on this, how do you think about choosing a tech stack for a company and then choosing a tech stack as an individual? Because it's kind of a, I hate to use the word pigeonhole, but it's a, you're dedicated to a technology often for a couple of years. And it's a big part of why people choose different companies is based on what technology they're using and want to learn. I'm curious if you have any just thoughts on this.
Yeah, absolutely. It can definitely be a, it can definitely be a hole you can dig yourself into, or you know, something that you could, a pit of success, I think they call it at Instagram. We started building Vibrant in 2019, I think, plus or minus a year. And at the time, I think we weren't even sure which market we were going to go into, because things can be complex legally. We were initially thinking making a global product that could exist in several different marketplaces before we honed in on Argentina. So we didn't know what platforms people were going to use. And in my experience, hiring native developers is really expensive, and it can be hard to find the right person, and very expensive if you want to find native developers on both platforms, both big platforms. So we decided to use React Native. It also helped that my background was in React. I think the best competition at the time was Flutter, which is very popular now, and the ecosystem is great from what I hear. But you'd have to learn Dart, and we didn't know what the ecosystem was going to be like. Again, another thing where it's hard to know how things will be in the day to day until you actually jump in. So we chose React Native. I think one great thing about React Native is it was really easy to hire people. I think mostly everyone on the team comes from a web background. So they've written React before, but they haven't specifically written React Native. But one or two people are seasoned React Native developers. So for us, it was just really easy to onboard people onto that, and for them to be able to contribute pretty early just based on their knowledge of React. But it was definitely hard. It's hard to say if it was a good decision or not, because you know we know the problems that we have with React Native. It's great for what it is. You know, we have an app on both platforms, but the tooling is a little rough to use day to day. Sometimes you just run into an issue, but it's hard to know what tooling issues we'd have with Flutter or something else. So I think we ultimately made a pretty good choice. Like maybe we would have been a month or 2 months or 3 months ahead if we chose Flutter. But for me, I think in general, for a decision like this, it really depends on all the obvious things like the ecosystem and the developer base that you can hire from. I usually err on the side of choosing things that are popular over things that are hot, because you just maybe you lose on some developers who want to do things the most bleeding edge way. But I'm usually of the opinion that any good developer can use whatever tool is available to make something great. But it's hard for a mediocre developer to use a great tool and make something great. So I think the tool set doesn't really matter. What matters is consistency, that you have a great product, that you have good product market fit, that you hire great people, and the rest kind of sorts itself out.
Yeah. My experience, a big part of it, probably not a great thing, but the fact that the leadership team, like in my past experience, when we chose tech stacks, it's been our CTO saying, okay, I know LAMP stack and PHP or Ruby on Rails, or actually React Native. Yeah, it tends to be, because things start small. I mean, in your case, it's a little different. You guys had a funder that was like, okay, this is what we want to do. We want to pour money into this, hire people. I find most projects start off as, hey, do you want to come over and you know, drink a couple beers and knock out this project. And then we're building on this tool. And then that just kind of evolves and grows. And then if you're Facebook, you just reinvent the whole tool underneath the hood. It's interesting. We see a lot of people. One of the questions here we got from people or from somebody was, they're asking about the Mern stack, MERN. This was, I guess, used quite popular in e-learning companies because they said that they had a spike in junior developers down in Argentina after U.S. VCs invested in Latin American e-learning companies. And so they were asking how these junior developers could try to expand, earn more at other companies. I don't know much about the... Would you call it Mern stack?
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah. What is it? Mongo, Express, React, and... whatever the N is. What is the N?
I know. I have to figure it out. Yeah. N is Node. Oh, that's right. Node, Mongo, yeah, MongoDB, Express, React, Node. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's pretty close to what we use. I mean, we use, instead of using Mongo and Express, we have backend engineers who write Go because that's what a lot of what the Stellar, the other projects on Stellar use. I think it's a great tech stack. It's a great full stack way to basically write in one language, which is really great if you have one or two engineers who kind of have to do everything. I don't envy people who are just starting right now. You know, when I joined OkCupid 11 years ago, I knew a little bit of JavaScript and I knew HTML and CSS, and that was it. I would be less than unhireable today. It's pretty tough out there. I think a lot of junior engineers, they focus on, you know, they go through a boot camp, they build a you know, an Instagram clone or a Twitter clone or something, and then they frequently have the question like, what's next? And it's pretty tough. And the thing is, there's a lot of people with Twitter clones and Instagram clones on their GitHub. It can be really hard to stand out from the other junior engineers. So I really look for, when I hire junior people, usually what we do is just have everyone do a take home exercise and try to suss out from them if they're eager to learn and if they're pretty sharp, if they understand the JavaScript fundamentals pretty well. But I think nothing is as good a substitute as building your own projects and trying to build something production ready, and also thinking beyond just what you're writing code to do something, but thinking about the user, being really serious about things like design and usability. I think those are the best ways to stand out. But I imagine it's pretty hard out there for a junior engineer.
I find having your own website, you know, it sounds simple, but I find that people who have their own site and have a portfolio or even just passion projects they work on, even if it's outside of technology, that you're kind of demonstrating that you take, honestly, it's like you take yourself serious enough to create this. You take yourself serious enough to build the resume, to update your LinkedIn, to have a personal page. Oftentimes I find it's kind of probably a personality weakness in the classic engineering mind. Speaking as an engineer, having gone to school for engineering and the family of engineers, it's like you tend to focus so much on the thing that you're building and not on you. And just to dress yourself up a little bit, it makes a big difference because it's difficult. You know, I think it's good to put yourself in the employer's position, not you, because you are, but people who are applying and thinking like, okay, Morley's probably going to see a whole lot of candidates that they're potentially going to hire. How do I do something that indicates that I'm serious about this and want to work for this company and deliver more than they pay me? You know, that's ultimately the question that you have to answer as a candidate. Like, how can I make sure that I'm offering a lot more to this company? So that could be contributions on open source. It can be ideas. I love the suggestion of, I think James Altucher is a podcaster. He came up with this idea. He said when he was dead broke, he was looking for a job or an investment, I think it was. And he's like, most people would send 1,000 resumes. They said, let me just, you know, apply to a ton of places. He said, I'm going to apply to 10 and I'm going to send the CEO an email. And it's the email is going to be, it's going to have a whole business strategy on what I think that this company should do. And he'll send it to big companies, but it'll be really thoughtful. And he said, of those 10, he got roughly 2 responses. And of those 2, half of them took an in-person meeting with him. And it's like, if you're going to spend a full day interviewing or applying rather, I think it's way better to invest in a small number of positions that you're really interested in than just spraying and praying.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. At every job I've been in where I've hired, I'm just amazed how many people will send a resume and like a form cover letter or a cover letter where they usually find and replace the company name, but sometimes don't. Like for me, I would always make sure to read on the company and try to figure out roughly what the team is looking for, both like technology wise and ethos wise, and just try to say like, hey, I'm really interested in this aspect of it. I think I can add, you know, this I think this quality that I have will flow into what you guys are doing. So it's such a simple thing, and it takes like 15 minutes or so, but it just raises your percentages so much.
Yeah. 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 And especially in a world where everyone's remote or a lot of engineering teams are remote, it's like your pool is just much bigger. You know, it means it's in one sense, it's more competitive, but also there's a lot more opportunities. There's a lot more connections to be made, especially for engineering teams. Like when we were in Los Angeles, there was only a 10 mile radius we could hire people from. And so now being remote, it's like you can hire anyone in the entire world. So it just opens it up tremendously. Like, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I have a screaming baby in the background, so don't notice that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it's another, you know, that's another reality of living in remote teams is like people are working from home. They're working. You're seeing a lot more of people's true life, which I think is a big perk. You know, you get to know someone how they truly are instead of when you go to the office. Classically, you put on a suit and you almost put on a different persona. Do you guys have any plans to? You're all remote now. Is Stellar as an organization entirely remote?
We have offices. We have an office in San Francisco. It's amazingly gorgeous, and I can't wait to get back. So I think we're I'm in Brooklyn, and I think today we would have signed a lease, or we will sign a lease for a new office space that is getting built out, and we're going to go back in October. I think it really depends on the team for Stellar and where people are. I really miss being in an office, and it does shortcut a lot of things. But that said, the Vibrant team happens to be very remote as it is. So even if a portion of us were in the office, we'd still have to do video calls all the time. So I think we're probably going to end up with where even if you're around an office, you have to be in 3 days a week, because it is valuable, and you know it's nice to you know have a random conversation with someone while you're waiting for an elevator. But I think we've always been pretty flexible, and we always hired remote people. So it really depends on how much you need to be in the office and talk face to face with someone.
How about an annual like get together? Any
I can't wait for that.
Those are awesome, especially when you have people who haven't met before. They've been working together for, you know, 6 months remotely, and then you bring people in person. It's a really cool experience.
Totally.
It's like you already have such a good relationship, but then it's like seeing a long lost friend. You know,
it's wild. You know, meeting someone in person and realizing their microphone like obscures something interesting about their voice.
Yeah. Or they're like six, they're like almost 7 feet tall, or 5 feet tall.
Yeah, absolutely. We organized a conference in Mexico City in 2019. It's called Meridian, and that was so much fun. It was great being in Mexico City. And the year after it was supposed to be in Greece, but because of the pandemic, we had it online, which is cool. It was still fun, but it's not the same as meeting everyone in person, meeting people in the ecosystem. I think this year it's going to be online too, and hopefully the year after that we'll have it in person, and maybe we saved a little bit of money doing it online, and we can funnel into the return.
Yeah, go double as big this year.
Yeah,
That'd be fun. Well, Morley, thanks so much for hopping on. It was fun to get to know you a little bit and hear about Vibrant and Stellar. Are you active on any social medias, Twitter or I guess we're on LinkedIn, but
I am.
Do you write it all either?
Yeah, I am on LinkedIn and I am on Twitter, but I'm not very active on them, unfortunately. But yeah, if you're in Argentina, then download Vibrant. And if you're not, then you can check out Stellar. Stellar definitely writes a lot of stuff, a lot of great stuff about blockchain. And not just about blockchain, about people who use it. So
I would, Lumens. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Morley. And yeah, I really enjoyed it and wish you guys the best.
Yeah, me too. Have a good one too.
All right. Take care.
Take care.